Lawmakers on Capitol Hill are planning a series of events for tomorrow's one-year anniversary of the January 6th insurrection. Some early reporting suggests it may be mainly Democrats in attendance. Meanwhile, a press conference from former President Donald Trump that was scheduled for tomorrow has now been canceled. It's a week in Washington. We'll talk about that story and more. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you remember about the attacks on the Capitol last year? Do you want to see lawmakers from both parties come together to reflect on what happened that day? What needs to be done, do you think, to make sure something like that doesn't happen again? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Lauren Gambino is a political correspondent for The Guardian U.S. Lauren, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to start with a listen to Democratic Senator Brian Schatz from Hawaii on the Senate floor yesterday, remembering last year's Capitol attack.
I was here, and by I was here, I don't mean I was here in the Capitol. I mean, I was right here at this desk. And so no one needs to characterize it for me, or pontificate about it, or tell me what I think happened. I was right here. It wasn't theoretical. It wasn't a debate. It was a physical siege on the United States Capitol.
First of all, Lauren, this anniversary is personal for a lot of the lawmakers, their staff, and the others who were there that day. Can you talk about that a little?
Yes. I mean, this was a day that these lawmakers, you know, they fled for their lives. They didn't know exactly the extent of what was going to happen. You know, they were seeing violence all around them. I mean, this is incredibly, incredibly personal, and plenty of lawmakers, but also, you know, people who worked in the Capitol, they still bear sort of the emotional scars from that day. And certainly the police officers, many of them who defended the Capitol that day, bear physical scars from the violence. And so, you know, I think for a lot of lawmakers, it's very important to them that the memory of this day is preserved accurately. I think we're seeing and hearing, particularly among you know, sort of right-wing conservative media, we're hearing rewrites of the day and what exactly took place, and you know, some attempts to downplay it. Even the former President Donald Trump himself has attempted to downplay or rewrite what took place. And I think all of these efforts, what we'll hear a lot of from President Biden, Kamala Harris, the Democratic leaders in Congress, we're going to hear a lot about the day, and that is an effort to preserve the memory and preserve sort of a historical record of what took place.
What kind of things are being planned in the Capitol for that anniversary tomorrow?
So first, you'll hear from President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris. We heard from the press secretary today that Joe Biden plans to make very clear that that Donald Trump bears, she said, singular responsibility for this event. It's unclear if he's going to call out the former president by name, but she said it would be very clear who he was talking about. So we do expect that in the morning, and then throughout the rest of the day, there will be remarks from House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. She will hold a moment of silence on the House floor. We'll also actually, I think this is an interesting event, they're going to have historians in conversation with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, just to discuss again the importance of remembering this day so that it doesn't take place again, so that we can learn lessons from it. And then it will close with a prayer vigil on the Capitol steps. So a lot of a full day of events tomorrow.
Meanwhile, former President Trump had announced he would be making an address tomorrow in Florida that is apparently canceled now. What do we know about the back and forth on that?
Yeah, Donald Trump had come under pressure, you know, interestingly, from Republicans and conservatives like Laura Ingraham, who thought maybe it's not the best idea for Donald Trump to be holding a press conference in which he would almost certainly rail against Joe Biden, probably revive claims of false claims of the stolen election. And the idea is that, you know, that just doesn't help. Republicans don't want to spend the day being asked if they agree with Donald Trump's false memories of the day. And so he had, you know, become under a lot of pressure to pull out. And So ultimately, he did cancel that press conference scheduled for January 6th and said he'd have more to say at a later rally. So certainly not the last from him, but we won't be hearing from him, it seems like, on January 6th, at least in the form of a press conference.
It's our weekly look at some of the top stories in national news. Lauren Gambino is with us from The Guardian US. Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Saul is with us in Stevens Point. Saul, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to point out, I'm not in favor of what happened on the 6th, absolutely the opposite. But remember that the mayor of Washington, D.C., because of the overuse of the military during some of the Black Lives Matter displays, begged them to keep the military low-key, keep them invisible. And that's one reason the military wasn't ready to move in. There were a lot of contradictory things going on at the same time.
So thanks for the call. Lauren, we have this ongoing investigation. Is that one of the angles that this House committee is still looking at, the various levels of security precautions taken or maybe not taken leading up to the 6th?
Absolutely. The security failures, I mean, it's been called failures at sort of every level. You know, what happened in D.C., well, you know, all the way up the chain is being investigated by the House Select Committee. Also, the DOJ is looking into what occurred, and then Capitol police officers as well have issued a number of different reports and analysis and given testimony as to what had happened on that day. And we actually just got a recent report from Capitol Police about their preparations going forward and what has changed and new security measures that have been enacted since. So certainly this is all a live discussion and part of this ongoing investigation.
Thanks for that call, Saul, at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Tyler next in Wausau. Tyler, hello.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Tyler?
So you were asking what one thing people remembered about the insurrection. And the one thing that kind of always sticks with me to this day is that there was video of Trump supporters tearing down the American flag and replacing it with Trump's MAGA flag. And it just kind of encapsulates at how far these people have, you know, gone to the right and how much they hate America.
Tyler, thanks for the call. A lot of people, Lauren, whether it's that moment or others, looking at the symbolism, the world watching these events in the capital of the United States. Is that something people are still talking about, just what this did to the world's view, to people's view of the United States?
Absolutely. I think, you know, everyone has their image from the day. You know, for me, it's that guy hanging from the Senate, from the you know, the seats in the upper chamber of the Senate. And I just think, you know, there was, these images were just so shocking. This is the seat of American government, and to see it overrun by rioters, to see the violence, to see, you know, the different flags, the Confederate flag waved in the halls of Congress. It was just very shocking. And I think it exposed, you know, a vulnerability to American democracy like we haven't seen before. And I think sort of that's the vein of the discussion that we're seeing build in on this 1 year anniversary. You know, how do we make sure our democracy is secure? How do we prevent this from happening again? Because it was just so shocking.
Before we move on from this topic, Lauren, we of course have this House committee looking at what President Trump knew, calls for him to take action throughout the 6th. We heard today from Attorney General Merrick Garland talk about an ongoing investigation, saying, quote, the Justice Department remains committed to holding all January 6th perpetrators at any level accountable under the law, whether they were present that day or otherwise criminally responsible. What are you watching for next in investigations from Congress or from the Justice Department?
Well, certainly we're looking at how close they get to Donald Trump's inner circle, to Donald Trump himself. We've heard from members of the committee that they, you know, are finding more and more evidence to suggest Trump didn't take action despite being asked to on the day of that he didn't take action to stop the rioters, that he was asked by his daughter Ivanka, for example, to please intervene. And so I think I'm curious where all of these all of these different threads lead. You know, Do they ultimately lead to someone in his inner circle being referred for criminal charges or the president? It's all very uncertain, possibly unlikely, but nonetheless, that's sort of where the discussion is going.
Talking to Lauren Gambino, political correspondent at The Guardian U.S., with us today for a weekly look at some of the top stories in Washington. Coming up, efforts by Democrats to pass a federal voting rights law. You can join in on that at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see something at the national level setting more standards that states have to abide by? Or do you think it's better for states to have more authority over how they handle elections and voting rights? Do you support more access to voting by mail? Or do you want to see that reined in? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our look at the top stories in national politics. Lauren Gambino stays with us from The Guardian U.S. Now efforts to change voting rights laws in Congress, a Democrat-led initiative. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see something pass? Do you want to see bipartisan cooperation? If it's not there, should Democrats in the Senate figure out a way over or around or through the filibuster? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Lauren, what do Democrats have on the table right now when it comes to voting rights?
They have two bills. One is called the John Lewis Act, and that would restore the Voting Rights Act, pieces of it which were gutted by a Supreme Court decision a few years ago. And then the second one is far more expansive, and that would really change the way we run elections in terms of giving setting a federal standard, if you will, for how we run elections. It would also have implications for campaign finance. It's pretty sprawling, and Democrats feel very important. They point to this new flurry of state-level laws that are sort of rolling back, restricting access to voting. Some of the expansions we saw in 2020, particularly due to the pandemic, so expansions of mail-in voting, those kind of new rules, those are being rolled back. And many of these state-level Republican lawmakers are using Donald Trump's false claims of voter fraud as sort of a basis for needing these new laws. So Democrats feel that their bill is really a response to that. But again, it does go further. And that's why there's been such strong debate in the Senate about it. Democrats have just 50 senators. They are trying to get bipartisan support. But as of right now, they certainly do not have anywhere near 10 Republican votes that they would need to overcome a filibuster. So they're more or less stuck. Senator Joe Manchin, always a key figure in the Senate, he has been working to try to find some sort of bipartisan consensus on voting rights, but so far has really not even come close to finding that middle ground. So that's kind of where they are. They're pretty stuck. But they are trying to forge ahead, and they're discussing, you know, different ways of possibly reforming the filibuster to pass this legislation.
I want to give a listen to Republican Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell on that point of Democrats making the case that laws are being eroded in states around the country. Here's a listen to him on the Senate floor today.
The American people are not buying this nonsensical talk of Jim Crow 2.0 or a voting rights crisis. Everybody apart from left-wing activists and the press understands this emperor has no clothes at all.
So doesn't sound like a lot of openness to a bipartisan compromise there from the Senate Minority Leader.
Absolutely not. We're hearing talk from Republicans about, you know, possibly being open to reforming something. You know, it's tangential. They're not really looking directly at voting rights. I think Democrats sort of know that their one way to do this is to try to find some carve out, some change, some rule change to the filibuster in order to just pass this with 50 Democratic votes. But you run into the issue of Joe Manchin and another senator, Kyrsten Sinema, who just don't want to get rid of the filibuster and are really wary of doing anything that might undermine the sort of power of the filibuster, which again requires 60 votes in the chamber.
You mentioned one idea that some conservatives might be on board with. There have been calls to reform, including from some conservative media outlets. The laws related to what happened last year on January 6th, what is really a ceremonial signing off on the already completed electoral college count to make it really crystal clear that, no, the vice president can't single-handedly block the election of the next president. Does it seem like there's openness to say, hey, let's lock down some clarity on that process?
Absolutely. And that's actually something that the House Select Committee, which will come out eventually with a list of legislative proposals for the Congress to consider. And that is certainly in one of the issues that they're targeting. Let's just make this language very clear so that we have no misunderstandings going forward. We want to know what the role is of the vice president, that it's ceremonial in this function, and we just do not want to have any lack of clarity there. And so I think there is an openness to reform that. But again, that isn't exactly what Democrats are focused on with their voting rights bill. That's a little separate. So, this won't satisfy Democrats' urge for voting rights reform, even if Democrats do support making that language clearer.
Talking to Lauren Gambino from The Guardian U.S., looking at some of the top stories in national politics right now, including Democratic efforts to pass some kind of voting rights reform that would apply to all states. Let's bring on a caller on that now. Liz is with us in Waukesha. Liz, hi.
Hi there. I cannot understand for the life of me why the Republican Party would not want to vote for fair and secure elections that prevent voter fraud. Why? What are they thinking? What is going on? That it sounds rather devious to me. I think every senator, every House Republican, everyone should want a fair, secure election so that the people win the president that they elected.
Liz, thanks for that call. Lauren, one argument I've seen certainly from Republicans is along the lines of, hey, elections are the state's job to run. We don't want the federal government stepping on toes. What are you hearing from Republicans as to why they don't want to pass these two packages of voting rights bills?
That's absolutely right. And they also argue that expanding access, expanding mail-in balloting, for example, makes it easier for a voter to commit fraud. We haven't seen any evidence of that. But nonetheless, there is this idea that making it easier to vote somehow makes it easier to commit voter fraud. And that is what many, especially at the state level, have embraced. Again, not a lot of evidence to back that up, but that is one argument. And so in their defense, they're saying, we're actually trying to guard against voter fraud, and that's what these laws do.
Thanks for that call, Liz, at 800-642-1234. Lauren, I want to look at an agenda item for Democrats in Congress that spilled over from 2021. They passed a COVID relief package early in the year, the infrastructure bill, with some Republican support later in the year. That left part three, the Build Back Better Act, a lot of social safety net stuff, climate change, and more. What is happening, or I guess maybe what is not happening with that right now?
I think that's the better question. It's kind of been left twisting in the wind. Again, we go back to Joe Manchin. He has said he does not support it, cannot support it, and will not support it in its current form. And, I think just one way to encapsulate this whole debacle that Democrats find themselves in is on this legislation, they can actually move forward. They're using a parliamentary procedure to move forward with just 50 votes, but they don't have Joe Manchin. And yesterday, Joe Manchin said he has not been talking to the president. He hasn't been in negotiations with his fellow Democrats to try to find a consensus plan he could back. And at the same time, Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and the White House were saying, oh no, we're still in negotiations with Joe Manchin. So if they can't even agree on whether they're in or out of negotiations at the moment, I think it's a very long and difficult path ahead for the Build Back Better plan.
Is anybody publicly floating either Manchin or the White House? Okay, how about this as an alternative plan? Or is that just where nothing's going on right now as far as we can see?
As far as we can tell, so there was some reporting that Joe Manchin had sort of offered his red line to the White House, but then weeks later, he went on Fox News and said he couldn't support what the White House is putting back. So it's unclear if he'll go back to that, to the drawing board, and they'll look at the offer he reportedly put forward to them several weeks ago. You know, we know where his issues are. He's got issues around the child tax credit. And so maybe that's a starting point for negotiations. Maybe they try to pare it down and just focus on climate and then come back to other pieces of the bill. If anything were to pass, it would be very, very stripped down from what it is now.
Lauren, just briefly as we wrap up, what are you watching for? What's a top story you're watching for in 2022?
Well, it's an election year. So certainly we are watching how Democrats try to hold on to their very, very thin majorities in Congress. And as of right now, it is not looking, the landscape doesn't look great for them. As we just watch Democrat after Democrat retire from Congress. So that's definitely something I'm starting to keep my eye on and we'll be watching for the next 11 months, 10 months.
Lauren, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking to Lauren Gambino, political correspondent at The Guardian US. She was with us today for our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics.